This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
On today's episode of the Nerd Nest podcast, we're going to talk about the possibility of an Xbox handheld, the fact that Phil Spencer is very interested in making one. We're also going to talk about the idea of whether or not the Steam can end up on Xboxes and maybe even that Xbox handheld. Plus, we're going to talk about whether or not we think that the orange pie hitting $500 is going to make a dent. As well as the games that we've been playing and some upcoming games as well. So if that sounds good, let's get started. This podcast is recorded using Riverside.fm, which makes it super easy to have studio quality recordings and lightning fast editing. Riverside is a virtual studio that makes recording and editing at the highest possible quality available to anyone. All you have to do is give your guests a link and Riverside does the rest. Riverside records each participant as separate audio and video tracks, which means everyone on your podcast is going to look and sound great. You can download those tracks separately, or you can use their dedicated editor to fine-tune your podcast. You can edit via selecting text just like you're editing a document. Riverside also has tools to improve your audio quality. They use AI to focus on who's talking at any time, and they bring in new features all the time. I've used so many different tools for podcasting, but Riverside is essential. It makes everything easy so that you can focus on your show and not the process. If you want to know more about how you can use Riverside, then check out the link in the description. But for a deep dive on Riverside.fm and how I use it to make the Nerd Nest podcast, click on the top link in the description. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Nerd Nest podcast. I'm Bill. I'm joined today by Russ and Carrie. And I got to say that Carrie has been willing this thing into existence. He's been talking about this for a very long time. He's got 5 of the 6 Infinity Stones that he needs so that he can snap, and then Phil Spencer will give us the Xbox handheld that Carrie has been talking about for ages. In fact, it seems like Carrie is not the only person thinking about this, because Phil Spencer said that he cannot stop thinking about the idea of an Xbox handheld. Carrie, like, you keep talking about this. You talk about the idea of the Xbox Series S as the reason that it could work. Can you quickly recap your thought process behind this and then tell everybody to go watch the video that you posted 2 years ago?
So this is, I first made this prediction 4-ish years ago. This is when the Series S just came out. Like, they were just launching. And someone made a topic on Resetera, the forum, gaming forum. They're like, do you think that they should have made a more powerful Series S? And I was the first one to post that. I said, I believe this is a Trojan horse for things to come. And I saw it as a handheld, but only because I've been so deep in handheld space for so long, and I've been like tracking how performance was against different GPUs and stuff, and equating what teraflops were. And even though like Vago at 6 teraflops and RDA 2 at 4 teraflops is completely different, the reality was that every way that we looked at Series S looked arbitrarily low, like calculated low. And I was looking at that, I was like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I could see, like, you could just upclock these. There's no reason for that clock to be so low. You can have the exact same chip and just boost clocks on the GPU and have better performance. But they don't. So it's like, well, why would they do that? And it's like, oh, it has to be for doing, like, low-power stuff. Now, obviously, they also use that in the cloud interface as well, because they can do more cloud Series S instances in the cloud. So it helps them there. But it also helps them in the handheld. And the things that I was basically explaining was the video is over, it's like a year old now. And I was more or less explaining AMD Halo Strix. So this is AMD Strix Halo. And this is essentially everything that I was saying. So we need 256-bit wide memory bus. There's implications there that a lot of people don't really like. Everyone's like, "Oh no, that part's going to be like 50-watt," and I'm like, "I guarantee you, we'll be able to take this lower than 50-watt and a lot lower." And not only that, when we push it at 10-watt and like cap memory frequencies to its low power state, we're still going to be able to take advantage of that double bandwidth to equal the same amount of bandwidth that's on the ASUS RG Ally and all these other things today, but at half the memory power. And because those have a shared clock domain with the memory controller on the package that where the CPU and GPU are, that gives you more power for the CPU and GPU. There's lots of benefits. It's just that it costs more. It costs more, and there's other things. So that's one of the reasons why you wouldn't do it. But Microsoft makes their own custom APUs, much like how Sony does. Like they have custom Zen 2 CPUs and custom RDNA 2. It's not even full RDNA 2 on PS5. And even with the PS5 Pro, we're getting like little bits of RDNA 4 in there, things that no one even knew was possible, like BVH8. And it's like, oh, that's cool. No one knew that was in there. So you look at all these things that Microsoft can do outside of what AMD is doing, because all of AMD's chips, typically, we're getting laptop parts. We're getting stuff that's destined for a laptop. So it has a bunch of CPUs, and for what it's worth, has a bunch of GPUs as well. But basically, all this comes down to when you look at it and when everything was coming down, when I had made the video a year or so ago, the 7840U was just around the corner, and I had someone give me some numbers on like how much the CPU is doing power-wise, because believe it or not, the CPU is our biggest problem. You would think that the GPU is the biggest problem, but it really isn't, because the CPU, we could solve things on the GPU side by just going wide and slow. You could pay for it, right? Like if you just made wide silicon, look at the Apple M3. I mean, you look at the Apple M3, it's like they made they made a monster chip. And they're just like, you know, when someone buys an M1, they're like, do I even need an M2? Do I even need an M3? They made such a good chip that people are even questioning if they need to upgrade. That's how good of a like a chip that they made, right? And
MKBHD still edits on his M1 Mac, and he does like 8K videos to do like. It's crazy how powerful those chips are.
It's not like they're doing any magic. They're just doing everything to the max. They're min-maxing all over the place. It's like, oh, CPUs, let's put a crap ton of cash in the CPUs. Oh, GPUs, let's make it 256-bit wide for the Pro and 512-bit wide for like the max schmax or whatever it's called. They went crazy. And as a result, it's an unbelievably great chip. This is like more along the lines of what we can do, and typically AMD doesn't want to do this, nor does Intel, because why would AMD want to do that? Why would AMD want to sell you a fantastic chip today? Because then you're not going to want to upgrade next year, right? It's from a business perspective, it's not good for them. But with Microsoft, if they make a separate chip that's for gaming only, AMD doesn't care. It's like, oh, it's not going to be used on PC. So that's what the whole basis of my thing was, is that Microsoft is in a unique position with what they did with the Series S to work with AMD and use all of AMD stuff, like 3D V-Cache, wide and slow, 256-bit memory controller minimum, all of these things, all of these components are there. They have been there. And looking at where the CPU was, and even talking about Zen 5, I was like, they can do it. They can make this a reality.
So your video essentially, and what you just said, is showing how it is possible that Microsoft could essentially cram an Xbox Series S into a handheld. And this is what Phil Spencer actually said about this. He said, "I want my Lenovo Legion Go to feel like an Xbox. I brought the Legion Go with me to GDC. I'm on the airplane. I have a list of everything that makes it not feel like an Xbox."
I got that same
Forget about the
list.
brand. What's that, Russ?
I got that same list.
Yeah, exactly. And he lists off all of these things, and they're the same things that we have been talking about for ever since we started getting these Windows handhelds after the Steam Deck came out. We're like, do this, do this, do this. And essentially, he's saying, hey, I brought my Legion Go with me on the plane, and there was a lot of things about it that I didn't like. And if anybody's in a position to make these things, these pain points that we've been talking about essentially since the ROG Ally came out, he's the one that can do it. He says, I want to be able to boot into the Xbox app in full screen, but in compact mode and have all of my social experience there. I want it to feel like the dashboard of my Xbox when I turn on the TV, except I want it on those devices. Now, it seems to me like he's saying, well, I want to redo the UI for these other devices. Not necessarily that they're making new hardware, although there is more in the article later on where he talks about that. Russ, what do you think about what he says here?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he's talking more about making the Windows experience more like Xbox, as opposed to I need to put an Xbox in a handheld. I see two things happening. Like, there's two kind of potential like forks in the road here. The first is they make an Xbox handheld where it literally is an Xbox Series S, but with like a handheld component to it. And I think, like, for me, that's very interesting. I'd love to be able to just boot into my Xbox, be able to play my Xbox games that are on there that I've already purchased for my Xbox years ago or whatever, and then also have Game Pass right then and there. That'd be amazing. And just have like an Xbox experience on a handheld. That sounds great. But if they can make a Windows handheld that also gives you that Xbox experience, because maybe they update the Xbox app to make it still feel like that, but then I also have my access to Steam library, then that's like double the handheld right there. Because not only can I play all the games that I purchased on Microsoft and Xbox and all that over the years, but all my Steam library too. And I'd love to have both of those. Like, I want my cake and to eat it too. An Xbox handheld would be great. And I think there are enough Xbox fans who can really benefit from that ecosystem. But holy crap, a Steam handheld and an Xbox handheld in one would be amazing.
It would. And he says, this is from the Polygon interview. They said, Spencer described two approaches to making Xbox available on handhelds, the hardware versus the software approach. As he said, he has strong feelings about what a handheld Xbox device should feel like, but also recognizes, having learned from the console business, that players may choose brands other than Xbox. And for those players, he wants to improve the software experience, too, for people who have, say, the ROG Ally or the Lenovo Legion Go, like that kind of stuff. Or any other number of Windows-focused handhelds. Carrie, if you were going to choose, like if you were in charge for the day, what would you prefer, an actual dedicated Xbox handheld or better software? You can only have one.
I can only have
better
one.
Software. For the Windows handhelds that we already have, to make them like an Xbox.
Easy. I want an Xbox handheld. You know, no
really?
Question. Yeah.
I didn't think you were going to say that.
Well, because the reason is because I can do a bunch of things myself on Windows side that I don't need Microsoft's approval for. I can't go ahead and make a custom SoC with AMD and spend billions of dollars to make something. But I do have some control over the Windows operating system to kind of make something into something that I want. That's a bunch of work, but as a community, they have been doing stuff. You have PlayNet, you have a bunch of other stuff. There are things that you can do. I'm not saying that Microsoft doesn't need the Windows side to do this. They do. But that's a separate thing. Worst case scenario, we have already been dealing in that situation and trying to make it better overall. I'm not saying that they don't need to do it. But in the scope of things, right, it's like look at the GPD Win Mini, the new one that came out, the 2024 edition. GPD got rid of the Oculink port on the back and replaced it with a USB-A port. I'm upset at this. Lots of people are really happy about this because they're like, oh, great, USB-A is back. And I'm like, we can make a USB-A port from USB-C, guys. Like, it's an adapter. It's a dongle that costs 12 cents. I can't make an Oculink port on the back of this thing. Like, I don't have a spare M2 slot anywhere. Like, think about what you're trying to change here. Like, that's the problem. So for me, it's more about, in one hand, I can't do anything. I can't fabricate that. On the other hand, I could at least exert my will onto the Windows operating system or anything to make something happen. And that's the difference that I is like, if I can invoke my own will on it and I don't need I'm not bound by a third party to like make something happen, then that's why it's an easy choice for me. Just because there is an avenue somewhere where the community can get something done there.
That makes a lot of sense. Another thing that Phil said, which I thought was far more interesting than the handheld conversation, which surprises me, is he talked about getting other stores onto the Xbox itself. So, you know, you boot up your Xbox and you obviously have the Xbox store, but sitting next to it, you could also have the Epic Games Store. You could also have the Steam Store, and it basically would turn an Xbox Series S or an Xbox Series X into a PC that could play all of these games. Because, I mean, at its core, the Xbox operating system is Windows, right? Like, it is a Windows operating system that's just essentially been skinned and optimized to just do certain things. So putting those stores on there and then playing those Xbox, or I'm sorry, those non-Xbox games on an Xbox system, I can understand how, from my standpoint as a consumer, that sounds really good, but I don't understand why Microsoft would want to do that, because they don't get any money if I buy a game on Steam, and that's almost always where I'm going to be. I'll almost always spend my money on Steam. Why would they want to do that? I saw a lot of people saying that it made sense for Microsoft to do this. Russ, do you think it makes sense for them to introduce other stores onto the Xbox?
You know, you made me think about a couple things, but one is, I don't see it unless they're taking a cut, and I don't think that that would happen either. And so I'm not really sure what's going on there. And, you know, when I buy a game, like say I'm looking at a Steam sale, whatever, I also go onto the Xbox and PlayStation and see what they're selling for at that moment as well. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of like make a decision based on, okay, I got my three options here, and based on all the data that I have, which place am I going to buy it? And so like Jedi Survivor, the latest like Star Wars game, I bought that and I ended up buying it for the Xbox because I had heard that the PC version was kind of buggy and it was a good sale on the Xbox. So that was a time where I had to choose between the three, and I chose Xbox that time around. And so, yeah, it makes it a lot less sense if they're going to be on the Xbox buying a Steam game that you're going to be playing on the Xbox. Microsoft's not getting any of that money. But it also makes me think about the idea of an Xbox OS, so that they could install this on like a Windows machine and have Xbox OS. And if it had Steam integrated into it, that would be amazing too, right? You'd have your Xbox experience, Microsoft controlled, optimized, and then also you could go and play your Steam games on it. That's almost the counterpart to Steam OS, as opposed to trying to make things work on Windows and you know, configuring it like Harry mentioned, like having an Xbox OS that ran PC games through the Windows interface and compatibility layer and all that stuff. But then also you could play Steam games on it. That'd be awesome.
What do you think about that, Carrie? Do you see a bonus for Microsoft if they did that kind of thing?
You know, him saying that out loud, I don't, because Phil Spencer does sometimes says things out loud.
We all do.
Yeah. I mean, it's a thing that would be nice, right, to have. But let's say that they do come out with an Xbox OS, right? That's going to be something that they have to now support. How far do they support it? Is it going to be supported like Windows is on a whole bunch of different hardware, and they have like a separate branch for that? I have no idea how that would be handled. Xbox OS is slightly, I mean, it's still Windows kernel that's running on there, but it is running in a hypervisor. So you boot in to the hypervisor and any game that you run is technically in a VM. So they're like isolated. So it's trying to, like, security reasons and a bunch of other things of what they're trying to do there. They extend IOMU and all this other stuff so that it still has full capability of all the hardware, but they virtualize pretty much everything. It's one of the reasons why, you know, how, like, Quick Resume works. They just dump the whole thing into RAM from the disk and just load it back up and start it right back up again. So it's one of the things that they can do. So would Xbox OS basically be this? It'll be, like, Windows kernel, they have the hypervisor, you're doing all the other stuff, but now it's plus, right? Now you're in a world where it has to do Win32 applications. Does Xbox OS have that? I don't know. I haven't done anything in there. I know that WA and WP, UWP, this is, you know, their Microsoft's new APIs for their latest stuff that's on the Windows Store crap. Everyone still loves Win32, and that's why Steam, you know, no one has a problem on Steam, really. Like, you get a game, you install it, it installs. On Xbox, because people like read and go on YouTube and it's like, make Windows faster. And it like just disables a bunch of telemetry, disables a bunch of crap on Windows. And Game Pass and Xbox are using those services. And it doesn't tell the user. It's like, I am not installing. And it's like, well, what the hell? This sucks. And yeah, it does suck. But there's lots of reasons for this, right? So, at the one hand, to answer your question, I think it would be good. I just don't know how they would get to that point. There's a part here that I want to try to get to, which I can almost see Phil Spencer's vision ultimately of what he's trying to accomplish. And you have to think of it in terms of what even Fortnite's doing now, because Fortnite adopted what Roblox is doing. Have you ever seen Roblox? Have your kids ever played Roblox? Have they done anything? My kid only plays Roblox. That's like only thing he plays. He'll go and like kind of deviate into Steam for a bit, but then he'll kind of retreat back to Roblox again. And when you look at Roblox, there's just a bunch of experiences that you play, games that you can play, right? Just rows and rows.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of Game Pass like Roblox. Like Game Pass is your experiences that you're going to play, right? Like you have this big list of stuff that you can play. So I almost feel like Phil Spencer is trying to get to that point, which is like, you know, the Xbox console isn't doing very good, and they're trying to leapfrog into some other position and trying to like co-opt what PC gaming is, because everyone's big on PC gaming right now. I don't know. It's a tough question to answer. I don't know how they would get there. I don't know if they would allow Steam. They might do Epic Games, and they might do Ubisoft, and they might do... who else is there?
GOG.
BNet. Yeah, I don't even think they'd do GOG. I think they would do BNet. BNet's already there. Like, you can already... Like, Diablo 4. You get on Game Pass, it links into your BNet. So you're looking at some type of translation layer that's happening there right now.
Yeah.
Will that happen to Steam? Will it happen to GOG? I don't think so. But to, like, Epic Game Store? Yeah. Ubisoft, yeah. So that's where I think like you're gonna have that delineation. I don't think we'd have Steam.
Yeah.
Well, if it happened, go ahead.
Another counter argument to my own like idea is that an Xbox OS sounds great from a user perspective, but it also would basically eliminate emulation, like because you wouldn't be able to like install emulators and stuff unless there were UWP apps specifically for that. And there are a few. You can play them in dev mode and stuff, but that would take away some of those nice benefits of having a Windows handheld, the desktop environment and stuff like that. Anyway.
No, that's a really good point. The thing that Phil said exactly was subsidizing hardware is more challenging in today's world. It might seem altruistic. I don't know that it's growing the industry. So what are the barriers? What are the things that create friction in today's world for creators and players, and how can we be a part of opening up that model? If I want to play a game on a gaming PC, then I feel like I'm in more of a continuous part of the gaming ecosystem as a whole, as opposed to on console. My gaming is kind of sharded, is what he says, to use a gaming term, based on different closed ecosystems. So basically he's saying it's kind of a pain. When I want to sit down and play a game, I have to worry about where did my friends buy it? And like, am I going to boot that up on my Xbox? Am I going to boot that up on my Steam Deck? Where am I going to boot this game up to play with my friends? And you shouldn't have to worry about that, is what he's saying. Which, he's saying all of the right things, but I still don't understand how, like, I guess what he's saying is right now it's really hard to subsidize the cost of the hardware. So why even bother? Like, we're not making enough money from doing it that way. So
right.
We need to find other ways to do it. And that's the kind of the same thing that I can't remember his name. Not Jim Ryan, but the other PlayStation guy had said basically, it's just too expensive to try and lock everything down. So we gotta be able to put our games on other platforms. And in this case, most of the time it's the PC. But I just thought it's super, like, the Xbox story, these stories this week have just been absolutely crazy. The idea that handheld, and the idea that we could get other stores on the Xbox. I guess the last thing that I would say, you know, you guys talked about whether or not Steam would show up on the Xbox. I think that if Microsoft opens it up to the Epic Games Store, they would probably also open it up to other, like anybody who feels like it. Because think about how many free games are given away on the Epic Games Store. Mm. And people claim them all the time and then never play them. I know I'm guilty of that. Although I most of the time I just forget to claim them. But like that's a lot of games where suddenly, well, I'm not going to buy it. I got a free one. I get all these free games just for linking my account. If they're going to let Epic Game Store on there, why wouldn't they do Steam, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you have to think about it in a few different ways. Subsidizing hardware, the problem with getting away from that model is gamers are the worst. And I mean that
they are.
And I mean that in a loving way. But like it's been a long problem, right? It's been a very long problem, especially like when PC gaming handhelds back in the day, like the GPD Win 2 was the best PC gaming handheld we had that was small and a handheld, but it was $650. And people were saying, why wouldn't I just get a Switch at $300 and do, you know, get a mobile gaming experience? I'm like, well, you can, but then you can't play a bunch of PC games and can't do emulation, can't do a bunch of other stuff. And they're like, all right, well, if I want a PC, why wouldn't I just get a gaming laptop for $700? And I'm like, well, you're not going to bring a laptop with you and bust it out on a bus and like start playing it like it's a handheld. Like these were the things that kept on coming up all the time. Very similar.
They make arguments that are not related to the argument that you're making.
Yeah. So Microsoft is going to have this real bad problem for themselves if they get away from, let's just say that they come out with the Xbox Core OS, right? So they're still doing something with platforms, but people can build their own Xboxes. I don't know how successful that will be because now the cost onus is on the people that are building it. But now you're going to have the same real conversation because Sony is the winner in the console space. You look at the PS5 Pro, that's going to, you know, I think it's the next evolution of where they are, but it's not like it's that ginormously more expensive for them to do. So it's going to be like $550 or $600. And when you look at that, you're like, man, I'm getting a whole bunch of machine for $600. And they're going to be still in putting themselves in like a losing situation. If they're still trying to sell Game Pass, right? If they're still trying to push Game Pass, they need to still be in that game. And they can't not be in that game. Saying that I can understand where he's coming from. It is a hard thing. But then again, Microsoft also has like $3 trillion. So I don't know what the hell, you know, like, just like.
Hard to feel bad for him.
Yeah, like. I mean, Sony's doing it, and they have, like, you know, a fraction of what Microsoft has. I get that they are, like, the market leader, and they know that people are going to be buying consoles, and the console space has been flat. It has been, like, I mean, you look at PS2, it sold, like, what, 150 million, 160 million units, and a lot of people are buying those as DVD players. The Switch is, like, 140 million units. That's super successful in console terms, but in terms of, like, everything else, it looks like flat. It looks like there's no growth, and everything sucks when that happens for any investors and all the other stuff. And unfortunately, they have to think about those people because that's where funding is going to coming from and all this other stuff. So it's a difficult thing. I'm not saying that it isn't difficult, but if Microsoft does this, right, they're going to find themselves almost immediately just like, well, I guess we're a third-party publisher now, and we just, like, Game Pass is going to have to just evaporate. Because whatever people have that are just going to slowly go away. That's where they're going to find themselves. I personally think that an Xbox handheld, because it's a personal device, that it also kind of doubles the amount of units. Because, like, how many Switches do people have in households?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, a lot of people will share a console, but a lot of people won't share a handheld.
Exactly. So you can almost double, you know, like, I'm not saying double, but you can get more units out there, 50% more, if you know that you need at least two because you have a family of four, right? You're like, I have to get him one, I have to get him one. But before, it's like, oh, that's in the living room, so just find a way to play together. So that's where I still find it, and I think the handheld, especially with smaller silicon, the cost is there, all the components are there. They can have something that plays Series S in a handheld state, plays something better than Series S when docked. And I think that's going to be very, very important, especially when the Super Switch comes out, you know, March 17th, 2025, because at that point, that's when people are going to be like, well, I'm going to either invest in Nintendo's ecosystem or I'm going to, like, do something else. It's going to be pretty critical. Whatever happens here is going to be a very tumultuous time.
And that brings me to a message that was sent in from at Harry Potter on Twitter. I asked for questions from people, and he said, what do you guys see the future of gaming going? Do you think it'll be more handheld gaming, or do you think household consoles will continue to be a thing? For me, I don't see consoles going away. It's just people want to play games on the big screen. And I understand people would like to be able to take their games with them, bring them home, and dock them. Yes, Nintendo does that. But it's extremely limited in power. And a lot of devs don't really care about how much power you have. And they like look at Dragon's Dogma. Like, no optimization was really done for that. I don't want to say no optimization. It needs some more optimization done, according to how people have been playing that. So do you think handheld is going to be more prevalent with, obviously, Nintendo's next system is going to be a handheld? We don't know that for sure, but I can't see them abandoning the handheld. And now Microsoft is possibly doing a handheld. There's rumors that Sony's been working on a handheld. Russ, do you think handhelds are going to replace consoles?
No, I don't. I don't see that being a replacement factor. And I don't know. Like, to be honest, like, I don't know if there's going to be an Xbox handheld, like what Carrie's talking about, where, like, it sounds great. Like, the idea is there, but does it move the needle for Microsoft or for Xbox in general? Like, just having it as a handheld platform there, I would put them in third place among the consoles right now, just by sheer volume, right? Nintendo sells a bunch of Switches. And I think that between PS5 and Xbox, the PS5 is obviously the winner. Does this move the needle for them? I'm not sure. And I'm not sure if just changing it into a handheld is going to be a significant change at that point. I still see, like you were mentioning, Bill. Yeah, I think people still want to have home consoles. I don't know if that's an older generation thing. Like, I don't know if 20 years from now people won't care about that. But for me, it's like, yes, I have a TV, which means I will have a home console underneath it. You know, I don't know if that'll be a thing in the future, but yeah, I'd love to have a handheld Xbox. I think it'd be cool. I like the idea of it being dockable and make it more powerful or whatever it happens to be. But yeah, I don't know if it's a disruptive enough element to really actually make any sort of difference.
What would you want more, a handheld Xbox or a handheld PlayStation, Russ?
Man, that's a good question. I think to be honest, I don't really care about a handheld PlayStation. You guys are going to hate this, but I got a PS Portal, and it works just fine.
I don't hate that. Carrie hates that. I was on Team Portal, and mine arrived broken. So,
as far as I'm concerned, I have a handheld PS5 already. Like, wow. It works that well. Like, I don't mind it. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I don't really need a handheld PS5. I love the idea of a handheld Xbox, though. Like, the idea of something that can play on its own, play my Xbox games on its own. And man, if they open up that Steam store, it'd be crazy. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to other handhelds that we know are coming. Specifically, the Orange Pi Neo, which is a Linux gaming handheld. And the price is actually pretty decent. This comes to us from Gaming on Linux. Liam says, after being revealed early in February, the upcoming Orange Pi Neo will come with Manjaro Linux. It has a price, and there will be multiple versions. Starts at $499 with a Ryzen 7840U and an 8840U for $599. The first thing that I thought when I saw this, I think I tweeted at Carrie, and I was like, is there any reason to get the more expensive version of this? Because the 8840U doesn't offer that much more performance over the 7840U, and I could save $100. This is completely opposite from what I said when you look at the Z1 Extreme versus the Z1. You know, like, I was like, I can't imagine getting the Z1 instead of the Z1 Extreme because the price was only $100 more. But, Carrie, what do you think? 8840U version or the 7840U version?
Yeah, there's no reason. There's no reason to get the 8840U. At the current moment, there isn't. Especially if you were planning on using Linux on this, there's zero reason at the current moment. Someone had made mention to me that there is some Proton stuff to do Wine Layer HAGS, hardware accelerated GPU scheduling. So there looks to be some type of work on Linux side to kind of translate whatever that would do from Windows to Linux. The only reason that HAGS is enabled on 8840U, as far as I can tell, and not on 7840U, is AMD shenanigans. And the only reason that, that they're doing it is because of AFMF and FSR3 benefit from HAGS. So you want to have HAGS enabled to make FSR3 and AFMF work a little bit better. So, or at least be not as much of a performance hit that would be noticeable.
So looking at the stats of the Orange Pi Neo, whatever, Neo, I think that's just what it's called, Orange Pi Neo. It's got a 7-inch screen, 1920 by 1200, 16 by 10, 500 nits of brightness, and 120 hertz refresh rate. So, Russ, that's fantastic for black frame insertion if you're playing some retro games. It's got 16 or 32 gigabytes of RAM. It's got Hall triggers. I'm assuming Hall sticks as well. Hall sensing sticks as well. It's got a 50 watt hour battery, which is the same thing that's in, like, that's what's in the Steam Deck OLED, right? 50 watt hours?
It is, but it's 2S1P, mm-hmm. not 3S1P.
I don't know what that means. You want to tell everybody what that means? Because it seems like you're just making up letters.
Yeah, 2 series, 1 parallel versus 3 series. So it's 7.4 volt versus 11.4 volt or whatever, 11.7 volt.
But put that into terms of like the consumer experience. Why do I give a damn?
You don't. You don't.
Okay.
Don't worry about it.
I don't care about that. Yeah. Okay. Comes in white or black. I have to say, as a content creator who has to take photographs of the ROG Ally, I will not be buying a white one because the white ones, it's always a pain to get a good picture of that. The black, the Steam Deck coming in black always looks better in my photo, in my thumbnails than the ROG Ally. Russ, what do you think about these stats and a $500 price?
Yeah, it sounds good on paper, but this is a new handheld, and there are so many things that can go wrong with a new handheld. One little thing, joysticks, triggers, buttons, you know what I mean? It can ruin the experience. And so at that price point, yeah, it does sound good, like what you're getting bang for your buck. But also, I have seen the ROG Ally Z1 Extreme like go in on sale for around that price point as well. And so I don't know. I personally... That's a known quantity. I know the good and bad with that one. And this has got a lot of unknowns to it. And so I'm not getting excited about it just yet, but hopefully I can get my hands on it and see how it goes. The whole Linux part of it is interesting. You know, the idea of that it running on Manjaro Linux and all the things that can kind of come from that. But I don't know. Am I going to be able to play Destiny 2 on it? Like, that's a big deal for me. And
no.
So, yeah. And so that's one of those things for me is like, I like specific games as well. You know, so I like the openness of Windows, even though I have to deal with all the jank that comes with it. And so the Linux thing is interesting, but it's not a huge seller for me, especially with the Steam Deck existing. So, yeah, I don't know.
Do you think the price point puts any pressure on the Steam Deck? I mean, the Steam Deck comes in at $499 as the, right? That's the cheapest one, right? $499?
For the OLED model? I think it's $550 for the OLED model?
I can't
remember.
Wasn't
it like $425? I don't remember. It's not funny. We don't know how much a Steam Deck costs.
Yeah, I know. All of these other handhelds are way more expensive than the Steam Deck, unless you're getting the most expensive version of the Steam Deck.
Yeah, it's $550.
So, yeah. $550. So this is much closer. Yeah, so this is cheaper than the Steam Deck. Of course, I don't think that's not an OLED display.
Yeah, you can get
so that's something to keep.
You could get the LCD model for $400, the Steam Deck LCD model for $400. But if we're talking OLED, right? Like, obviously, people are going to want that. But yeah, you still can get a cheaper Steam Deck. But yeah, it's you look at the price. Right, so here's the thing that always gets me, and it's something like AYN always does and shit. And
I was going to bring them up too.
Yeah, it's like you start looking at these companies, right, and you're like, man, you guys are getting really razor thin margins, right? And you're not going to sell that many of these. I know AYN sells a lot considering that they're still in that same space of like Chinese handhelds, but they're still in the realm of 5-digit unit sales. They're not breaking multiple hundreds of thousands. They may be lucky if they get 100,000. So if you're looking inside of that space, right, when their margins are super low and Orange Pie is not an unknown quantity, if they come out with lukewarm reviews, like let's say those touchpads, which are just mouse touchpads, the software to make that work in, you know, OS side, Linux side, doesn't work like trackpads do on the Steam Deck, that's like dooming the thing from like the get-go. It's like, well, yeah, they kind of work, but they're kind of janky and they don't feel as good as the, everyone's gonna be like, well, that was a fun little deviation. I'm going to go back to a Steam Deck now. Because that seems like one of the few things that it kind of checks all the boxes for a lot of people. Whenever I would say there's this thing coming out, people are like, yep, but it doesn't have trackpads. And I'm like, oh, all right. So when I saw it have trackpads, I was like, well, good luck, guys, because they're doing their whole thing. Because I talked to some people there, and they are using an IC that will emulate a 360 controller. So it's 360++. So there's a bunch of stuff going on in the background to make all this other stuff happen. But when you go to Windows, the controller is just a 360 controller to Windows. And then those touch things are just basically two mouse touch pads. So there's no software on Windows side to get those working well. And how they work on Steam Deck is completely different, right? Valve does their whole entire thing, and this is completely different. So going back to what Russ said, that whole layer, it really is going to matter. But the price of what they're getting, that 7840U, 16 gigs of RAM, everything else in there, I have to start wondering, like, how much are they actually making on this thing? Because it's got to be razor thin. If you factor in, you know, shipping and all the other stuff, I know that they're making some profit, but after manufacturing and doing all the stuff, this is razor thin. And we already know that Valve has razor thin margins on the Steam Deck as it is. But they get the benefit of getting 30% or whatever, 20 to 30% of game sales on Steam. So they have the whole console, like, you know, loss leader type of thing where they could do the subsidized price on console, which is a huge deal for Steam Deck. And it makes everyone's, this is why I'm going back to what I'm saying. If Microsoft does this, they're going to rock the whole ecosystem, and it's going to be worse for them. Because, again, gamers are gamers, and they like, oh, that's a PS5 Pro? That should cost around $500. And it's like, no, it's absolutely insane. You shouldn't, no, Sony's losing money on this, guys. Like, no, it shouldn't. Like, so when you look at these other prices, it's curious to me, and I don't know how they're doing it. And I the part here that gets me is, how is support going to be? How is other things going to be? Because that is going to factor into that cost as well. And that's where things get curious.
I think that those trackpads, like, they're poorly positioned as well. Like, it's not going to be comfortable to use it. It's like the Aineo Kun or whatever. Like, that thing had trackpads, and they were terrible. They actually took away from my experience because my right palm would touch them, and they would be used as an input, and there was no way in the software to turn it off. And all of a sudden, like, I'm shooting the gun in Doom Eternal when I don't want to, you know? And so that's my worry about this kind of setup, too. There are so many unknowns. There's so many ways this could go wrong from a company that's never made a huge handheld PC like this.
Yeah.
Makes me a little worried.
Yeah, I'm looking at my Legion Go, and it's got a trackpad, you know? And it's not, like, I was very excited when I saw that this thing had a trackpad. I was like, oh, cool, because then I can still use it to do the cool on-screen menu thing that Valve does with Steam input. All I got to do is load up Steam and set it up as a Steam input thing, and it does not work that way. It's just a way to kind of skate around on the screen.
Yeah.
And I could just, let go and I touch the screen instead. If your trackpad doesn't do what the Steam Deck's trackpad does, then don't put a trackpad, because it's just not useful enough.
Yeah.
Without that Steam input stuff. And if it's only seen as a mouse, if the software only sees the trackpad as a mouse, then it's just not going to get used for very much anything. And the fact that they have two trackpads on the Orange Pi, right? They do, right?
Yes.
Am I remembering that correctly?
Yep.
Yeah. They have two trackpads on there. That seems like they're going for what Valve did with the Steam Deck. And I get what you're saying, that they look like they're down a little bit too low. But if you're just using them for menus and stuff like that, then I think that that's fine. I almost never use the trackpads for actual gameplay. It's usually used when I'm using it to bring up a little on-screen menu that will, like, press the M key to open maps or switch to a different weapon. I don't use it for, like, aiming very much. But I know that there's a lot of people out there that do. I think that could work, but with Carrie saying that it's just a mouse, then get it out of there and save some money.
Yeah, the price is still super attractive, so I know that there's a bunch of people that are still going to be interested in it because it's the best that they can get for a price that's very competitive. It remains to be seen. I didn't get any word if it was portrait or landscape. It leads me to believe that it is portrait. So that's fine in Linux world. There's no real... Who cares? On Windows side, it does become present itself as a problem if you want to... You know, there's going to be some games where something just happens and you're just like, well, that sucks. And then you have to go and fix it. But yeah, the pricing is... I have recommended people. I made an Orange Pie video. And I said, rather than spending $100 extra to get the 8840U, just spend whatever how much more to get the 32 gig RAM model. Because then you can go to like 8 gig UMA buffer size and have 24 gigs of system RAM. And that's an overall better investment of money.
That makes a lot of sense. Let's take a break from news and talk about what games we've been playing. I have been playing more Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I'm not going to get into anything at all about it. I'm just going to say I'm probably on chapter 10 now. Things are getting really weird in the story, and I cannot wait to find out where it goes. In the early game, I was doing a lot of, I'm going to do everything in the zone. But the story is getting more compelling at this point, and so it's pulling me along a lot faster, and I'm starting to like leave quests behind and just say, I don't care about that quest. I want to find out what's going on with this story, because there's some really strange things that are happening that are different than the original. There's some absolutely amazing and like heart-wrenching moments that have happened, and it's not the ones that you're thinking of, because I haven't gotten to the ones that you're thinking of, but there's some like really emotional moments, and I gotta say the voice actor for Barrett is knocking it out of the park. I'm loving his character as he has developed over the course of these two games so far. And then same thing with Cloud. Cloud has, like, he's had this character arc that I'm appreciating as I play through. So I'm loving that game. I can't wait to play more of it. But I don't want to spoil anything. Not even mechanics for people. It's really, really great. I will say some of the mini games are pissing me off. I don't want to do some of them, because they're just kind of irritating. Russ, you've been playing Castlevania Symphony of the Night?
Mm-hmm.
On what?
Yeah, so on my trip, you know, I got back from Japan, almost a week ago at this point. But during the trip, that's the game that I played the most on my Odin 2. So just PS1 version, you know, and I was like implementing cheats and stuff just to make it less grindy feeling, even though I think it actually is pretty well balanced just on its own, you know. My only disappointment was that I mostly was playing it on the airplane where I've got no Wi-Fi or whatever, and there were times where I'm like, gosh, I need to look up a map or something, because I don't know where to go next, you know. Like, it doesn't do a very good job in telling you that. I love the freedom of it, but all the same, there's moments where it's like, okay, well, thanks for all the freedom, I don't know where to go now, you know what I mean? That happens with me in Metroid sometimes too. Yeah. But that's been about it, and it's been fun. I think the mechanics of it like are bothersome to me sometimes. Oh, we just lost Bill.
No, I'm still here. Just okay. You guys keep going. I don't know what just happened.
Okay, no worries. So I'll keep going. But anyway, the mechanics of it, like actual gameplay, bother me sometimes. Like when you get hit, like it punishes you. You're like, not only do you fall back a little bit, but you can't do anything for a couple seconds, and it's just like. Almost reminding you, hey, you just screwed up. And like, we're going to make you feel that for a little bit. And so that's hard for me, is like getting past some sort of enemy every once in a while. Those cheats definitely help for that. But Otherwise, yeah, it's been good. I haven't played it. The last time I actually played it, or the first time I really played it, was on the Xbox Live Arcade when it came out. That was the first game I actually got for the Xbox 360 when I first bought it in 2006 or so. Because I had saw a friend who had been playing it at his house, and I was like, okay, I'm going to get an Xbox now, and I'm going to play this game because I've heard about it. And, like, you know, and so that was the first Xbox game I played. And I think the next one was, like, you know, Orange Box or something. But, yeah, so I've been having a good experience with that. The second game I've been playing is actually Final Fantasy VII Remake on my ROG Ally when I got back home. And so one interesting thing is that, like, I've been super jet lagged. Like, today is probably the first day where I feel like I'm back in a normal state. And so I've been, like, laying in bed and, like, playing games just to kind of hope that I would fall asleep. And I've been choosing to play Final Fantasy VII Remake on the Ally because I was like, well, it only gives you about an hour and 15 minutes of battery life. That'll be perfect. I'll be asleep by then. And then obviously I don't fall asleep. But, you know, one of the things you brought up, and I think it's a great point about that game, and then I'll stop talking, is the new updates to Final Fantasy VII do provide so much more character development than before. I think that in the previous versions, you know, there's definitely some character development happening, but it's all based on basically, you know, sprites moving a little bit and then some text. And it's really the text that that you're following. It's like almost reading a book at that point. Here, it's the opposite. You know, there are many unspoken moments in Final Fantasy VII Remake where I feel like there's a connection or I'm learning something about a character. And it's not because I'm reading something. It's because, you know, facial expression or just some sort of mannerism that just couldn't be done back in the day with the PS1. And so that's been a really interesting thing. And so I'm actually looking forward to, like, hearing, you know, Barrett has some character developments, maybe not so cringy. That sounds pretty interesting to me. So maybe I'll jump into that after I'm done with the remake.
What chapter are you on?
16 now. So I'm almost done.
Oh, okay. You're like right there at the end.
Yep.
Kerry, what have you been playing this week? Or are you too sick to play?
No, yeah, I actually played a bit of Horizon Forbidden West. Man, that game just looks beautiful. Guerrilla Game.
What have you been playing it on?
I started playing it on the Steam Deck, and I put it on the GBD1 Mini as well. And I'm trying to test out Mesa 23 versus 24 on Steam Deck and see what type of, if we can just, like, gauge quickly what type of performance improvement we can get, if any at all. Because Forbidden West is kind of a bit too much for the Steam Deck. But so far in the beginning, it's been more than fine. So I've been playing on that. But yeah, just kind of been like going through the paces, crafting arrows and stuff, and just going through the story of it. And I just find myself stopping a lot of times. I'm just like, wow, that looks really nice. Like, I just like do like a slow pan of like just looking at the scenery.
Yeah.
It looks phenomenal. So even like knowing you're like, I'm running on a 15-watt. You know, package power machine, I'm still incredibly impressed. So what also Nixis has done, Nixies, the PC porting house, they did an amazing job bringing that over. So a lot of credit for them for how much work they've done, because it's already apparent, even for like a launch day title. I know some people have given it some problems, like saying like cutscenes have like a performance dip, but I don't care. Like, you're saying that the cutscene, the part that you don't play at all, has a performance dip? Okay. Like, I don't know why that's a big deal, but I guess it can be jarring, but I don't think I would be like, oh, this game's unplayable. Like, that wouldn't even happen. Apparently the patch came out and already fixed that, so I'm glad. But yeah, so that's one thing that I've been going through. The other game that I have been playing... I got back into Diablo 4 because it's on Game Pass now. So I'm playing on my Xbox. And I was just playing on my couch, and I was like, man, this game's so much better. I also didn't do hardcore mode because I didn't want to be like, I'm hardcore mode, I got to be at my desk, and I have to be like, you know, in it to win it. So outside of hardcore mode, I'm just like slash kill, slash slash loot. And, you know, if I die, like, okay, no big deal. Let me just go back and get my stuff. I'll pay 1,000 gold to fix all that up. And it's like such a zen game to play, which is counter, like, you know, juxtaposed against how gory the game is. I was like, it's like slash murder, mayhem. And yeah, just having a ball with it. Just unplugged myself. I'm having a real good time with it. So I'm up to, I have like a level 18 barbarian on Diablo 4 on Xbox. I loaded up my level 62 Necromancer hardcore mode, and it like popped 3 achievements immediately. It's like, congratulations, you had a level 25 character. Congratulations, you have a level 50 character. Congratulations, you have a level 50 heroic character. And I was like, sweet. But it didn't give me a bunch of other ones that I totally did. And I was like, all right, well, whatever. I'll play through it again.
So, you know, you mentioned Diablo 4. I saw some stories recently. I haven't loaded it up in a couple of months. And I saw a couple of stories recently that were saying basically it's a whole new game now.
Yeah.
And people are saying it's so much better than it was before. What are the, like, have you particularly noticed that, like, okay, this is what it should have been at launch? And what exactly did they change that everybody's excited about?
So my heroic character couldn't go into season 3 because of what he was in, right? So when I created a new character, I went into season 3 and I skipped the campaign because I had already beaten it. So they just kind of plop me in the open world that I can go wherever I please. And I'm kind of going through it from that direction where you kind of already did the end game. You skip through it. And I am noticing that there are more events that are taking place that are going to your battle pass and whatnot. But there's just more stuff going on. So it's not just the, like, the get the oobles and, like, the red circle type of thing, or it's not just those, like, few events that they had, but it's another layer or two of other events going on that are going to your season rewards. Outside of that, I mean, it's pretty much that, but I'm finding that I really liked Diablo 4. I liked playing Diablo 4. I just kind of stopped playing it. And now that it's on Game Pass, I'm playing it again. And it really, like, game... I have to bring this up one more time. Now that Diablo 4 is on Game Pass, I am seriously, seriously wishing I had a real gaming phone, because I would totally play Diablo 4 on Xbox Cloud, like, on my phone, just to, like, get wherever I'm going, just, like, level up and just do whatever.
Mm.
I would definitely do that wherever I am. Like, let me get some Diablo 4 on my phone and just Xbox Cloud this. Yeah, it's made me wish for a real gaming phone even more. But those are the two games that I've been playing.
Jeff Gertzman posted this over on Threads related to Battle.net and being related, like, linking your Xbox. He said, oh gosh, I did the whole connect Battle.net to Xbox Live thing you need to do to play Diablo 4 on Game Pass, and now it launches the Battle.net client every time I launch the Xbox app on my PC, even though I decided not to install the Game Pass version of Diablo 4. Super messy. That is, like,
yeah.
Now that Microsoft owns, and people might hate me for saying this, but now that Microsoft owns Activision Blizzard, I think that they either need to throw the Xbox app in the garbage or throw the Battle.net launcher in the garbage,
right?
And just have one, or merge them somehow so that you don't have these two things, because it's.
Yeah,
it's yet another example of you know, stumbling blocks and friction on a window when you're playing a game on Windows.
Yeah, it's not that's big of a deal, but it still sucks, right? Like, it's like, why are you doing this? This is silly. And when people say to me, like, they want, this is why, again, I would rather have an Xbox handheld, because just a better Windows experience means I'm going to have more of this crap that I'm always going to have to think about anyway. There's a reason that I heard was that they wanted to continue to have these two things coexist just in case they need to. Basically, it's still a vertical merger, meaning Activision Blizzard is still its own thing, so they can't dissolve one or the other, and they have to coexist in this space. On Xbox, it's completely seamless. Like, you have zero idea what's going on. It logged me into my thing automatically because I had already... logged my Battle.net stuff previously, so it already knows my Xbox Live username, gamertag, and I didn't have to do anything. It just automatically worked, and I was like, this is a proper, you know, console experience that I was looking for. So I just jumped straight in, and the cloud works like that too. And it's more, I'm fine with it, because, you know, it's like a thing that I come to expect with stuff, but it's really not good. It's like... I'm not going to defend it. I wouldn't defend it. Microsoft needs to do way better on a lot of different things. I mean, hell, they need to do better on sleep mode. Like, dear Microsoft, if you're going to make handheld better on Windows PC, let's make sleep mode better, because modern standby is garbage. Just use it, please. Use your own product and for like a day. And it's like, oh man, this could be so much better. What have we been doing?
Yeah, every single time I play a game on my Legion Go or my ROG Ally, I shut the game off when I'm done. When I'm playing a game on my Steam Deck, I just hit the power button, yep, and I don't think about it. And it makes it a lot better.
Yeah.
Another game that I've been playing, so we had the Steam sale recently, and I bought a bunch of games because I'm weak and I couldn't help myself. So I saw that Final Fantasy VIII Remastered was on sale for, I think it was $3, so I ended up picking that up. And I've been playing a little bit of that. I played Astro Duel 2, which I played at PAX, which was a very, very cool game. I also picked up Chrono Trigger for on sale on Steam for, I think that was $5. And I ended up picking up, even though I already had access to it because of, either because of Game Pass or because of PlayStation, whatever it's called, Jedi Fallen Order. I ended up picking that up for on Steam as well.
Yeah.
And Shapes and Dragons Dogma, the first one, not the second one. So those are the games that I picked up, but I've launched Final Fantasy VIII, and that's the one that I've been playing on my Steam Deck, though most of my time has been in Final Fantasy VII Remake, Rebirth.
Nice.
But those are the games that we've been playing. Let us know if you're watching this on the YouTube channel. Let us know what games you guys have been playing in the comment section down below. We got a game that got announced, and did you guys get to see the trailer for Marvel 1943, The Rise of Hydra? Did you guys get to see these?
Oh, yes. That's the one that's like that amazing cinematic thing, right?
Yeah. It's Captain America
and
Black Panther in 1943, World War II. This game looks really good. And I cannot wait to get hands-on with this. It's developed by Skydance New Media. It releases in next year, in 2025. And what they say about the game, I'm just going to bring this up on screen real quick for the YouTube people. It says, in the chaos of the war, worlds collide. Captain America and Azuri, the Black Panther from the 1940s, must overcome their differences and form an uneasy alliance to confront their common enemy. Fighting alongside Gabriel Jones of the Howling Commandos and Anali, a Wakandan spy embedded in occupied Paris, they must join forces to stop a sinister plot that threatens to turn the havoc of World War II in the ultimate rise of Hydra. I love Marvel stuff, so I'm super excited about this. It's just really strange that this is coming out, and we also have a Black Panther game that's coming out as well. But this one looks fantastic. And if I have time after the show, I'm going to try and get the footage and put it over top of what we're seeing right now. I don't know if I'll have a chance to do that before the show actually goes out. Russ, you said that you didn't see it because I think you were in Japan when they announced this. Mm-hmm. Are you interested in like this kind of game, or is it something where you're like, I'd prefer to just watch the movies or read a comic book instead?
I just skimmed through the trailer while you guys were talking, and it looks interesting to me. I like story-driven games. It seems to be along those lines. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a unique story within the universe that I already know. And so it's something that sounds interesting, but it's all going to come down to gameplay, how it's going to run, and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm definitely more interested in this than something like, you know, like Suicide Squad or whatever, with all the online stuff. Like, I don't want to play any of those games. I just want to play a story game. And so this is up my alley, definitely.
Everything that they showed in the trailer was in engine, and I'm, for the audio listeners, I'm doing a bunch of air quotes because in engine is, I hate it when games don't show gameplay, and when they show in-engine, like, there's a lot of tricks that you can do to make games look way better than they will actually look when they come out. But this game does look gorgeous, and I love the setting, and I like the tone that they're going for. Carrie, are you interested in Rise of Hydra, or is this something you'll pass on?
No, yeah, like, even just the trailer itself, it was... I'm pretty big... It's going to sound stupid, but lip syncing in games and voiceover is such a big thing to me. So when they get it right, I'm like, again, this could be just like in-engine stuff where it's just a cutscene that we're looking at. But even just taking the time, because sometimes when you look at like, remember when like Mass Effect, I think Andromeda came out, and they were just talking, and it's just like, you know, their mouth is just moving, and they just have these weird facial animations. Like, how did this pass? Like, I get it that it was hard, but like for me, that's been like the barrier. It's also the same thing of like climbing up ladders. Like when you have a character that's climbing up a ladder and they're actually holding onto a ladder when they're going up, rather than just kind of making this like climbing ladder animation and it's just going up. That's always been like a big thing for me, because if I see a game developer spend the time to like, oh, he's going up a ladder, and he's like, you find like older Zelda games were very, very particular about, no, he has to be touching the bars of the ladder to be going up on it. So I'm always big on the little details. You know, like, what was the Super Mario Wonder? Just like all the little details that with the game. That type of stuff is stuff that I love. So it's like, when I saw the presentation for it, I feel like they're going the extra mile. So if they're going the extra mile, this is something that I need to be paying attention to, because anything that goes the extra mile is worth time. That's it.
Yeah. It's a labor of love as opposed to, you know, getting the money out there.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, let's not be crazy. They're making the game because they want to make money.
Yeah.
But yes, I also appreciate it when they go the extra mile. Speaking of money, Max Payne 1 and 2 is getting remade. And apparently, it has the same development budget. And I just put this on the wrong screen, so it'll take me a second to do this. It has the same development budget as Alan Wake 2. This is according to IGN. I mean, I don't know how much was spent on Alan Wake 2, but it got all kinds of accolades last year. And I gotta say, I never played Max Payne 1 or 2. That was on PlayStation 2, right?
On everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah.
It was on everything?
Yeah, it was on PC, so.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't play it, and I heard nothing but good things about it. So the idea that it's getting remade means, hey, now I get to enjoy the newer version of it. Carrie, did you play the Max Payne games back in the day, and are you excited about the remake?
I did, but I only played it for the bullet time stuff. So it was just like kind of just like, and just doing the Matrix-y bullet time stuff. I never played it more than just that. So no, I haven't put in any particular amount of hours. I was just like, oh, that's kind of cool. And like, flavor's gone, and just like stop playing it. So that's as much as I ever did. So no, I'm not a big Max Payne head.
Well, what about you, Russ?
I played the first one on PC. It was like the first PC I owned back in like 2000, 2001 or whatever. And I remember, like, I was just so in over my head. Like, I couldn't understand how to use a keyboard and a mouse at the same time, you know? Like, so I was terrible at that game. But I do, yeah, I remember the bullet time stuff, and that was kind of fun. I never played 2 or 3. I'd be interested in playing them now. I remember it being a pretty compelling story, you know, at least for the era. So
yeah. I'm looking forward to it because I never played the originals. So this is one of those things that is new to me. And I like that they're throwing a bunch of money at it. It's fantastic that Remedy saw success with Alan Wake 2. Also, a game that I haven't played. I need to play that because it's got all of those accolades. And I loved the first one. It just, last year was too many amazing games that came out. Just banger after banger after banger. I didn't have room in my... I didn't have time to play Alan Wake 2. So that's definitely something that I want to pick up at some point as well. I guess the last thing that I want to talk about today is the Nintendo Switch emulator. We had the Yuzu, and Yuzu got taken down. Nintendo jumped in the ring and said, you want to go? And Yuzu said, you know, think so. So let's not. And they settled, and you know, millions of dollars went back as going to Nintendo, and Nintendo got all of the stuff. And then Suyu, the hilariously named emulator, came up. I believe that it is now gone already. This comes to us over from Overkill, and trying to put that on screen right now. It says that they got a DMCA takedown just days after the first beta of Suyu went live, and it got taken down. It was on GitLab's, and they had a takedown notice, and then they followed their standard protocol for when you get a takedown notice, you take that stuff down and you ban all of the accounts that were, well, get the latest gaming news in your inbox, I guess. But anyway, what do you think about that, Russ? This is like, I know you were in Japan, so you didn't have a chance to put out a video about this.
So it got removed from GitLab, but they just went and self-hosted it instead. Mm-hmm. So it's if you just go to the suyu.dev website, that's their website, you can just download it. And I actually did download it when I got back and tested it on the MSI clock, because I was doing a bunch of emulation testing. So I did that and Ryujinx. And Suyu is just Yuzu. Like, it's the interface, everything. I mean, they've changed the logo and stuff like that. But I have not seen anything that, like, is moving forward. It's just an ability to play Nintendo Switch with a Yuzu-type interface right now. That's the only main difference. The big thing for me, I'm not too worried about Windows emulation for Nintendo Switch, because Ryujinx is going well, you know, and they've been improving their user interface. Like, that's the one I ended up showcasing on the MSI Claw. I'm more concerned about the Android side, like, because Suyu does not have an Android build of Yuzu forked or anything else like that, at least as far as I can tell. And so that's where I'm, like, putting most of my, like, attention to in terms of seeing what's going to happen next, because playing Nintendo Switch on Android is pretty amazing. Suyu's neat, you know, but I'm just going to kind of wait, and I probably will continue to show Ryujinx over it until we see some sort of development on the Suyu side that really kind of pushes forward. Because, like we mentioned before, you know, there's a big brain drain that happened when all the Yuzu devs stopped working. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of people who knew how to emulate Switch who no longer are working on it. And so no one can just pick up that torch and then move forward overnight. Like, it's going to take some work. And so I got my money on Ryujinx at this point.
Have you tried it out, Carrie?
No. The problem, like what Russ was saying, was for Suyu, what they have to just type more Switch emulation in the code. They're still missing that's commented out right now, so just uncomment that, and then it'll just get, you know, a bit more development. But no, it's a Suyu thing. Whatever. Okay. I don't really have any opinion. I'm basically the same where Russ is. It's nice that they've recompiled it so you can get, I guess, the latest early access build of Yuzu, so you can have, like, a place and time of where they stopped. So it's still very, very featureful, just most likely not going to get any improvements. Ryujinx, for what it's worth, has always been more accurate, which has not been as performant as Yuzu has. So I still like that Ryujinx is still going forward and didn't get touched. So, you know, let's hope that nothing changes there.
Well, I mean, if you're a dev that's out there making emulators, don't take any money. Like, that's the thing. I can't remember who it was, but somebody had posted that, yeah, we're watching all these people and we can't go after all of them, but the ones that are taking money, yeah, we're going to go after them. And It makes a lot of sense. If you're making money on it, that's the thing that's going to trigger people to, you know, lawyers to say, well, we can get some of that money. One thing that I'm curious about, like you said, it's basically a Suyu is a fork of Yuzu, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So Nintendo owns Yuzu now, don't they? Like, didn't
yeah, but
everything...
it was open source. And so if somebody forked the open source project, I think it's fine. Nintendo owns, like, the URL and the domain and stuff for Yuzu. Okay. And I know they took that stuff offline, but I don't think they can own open source stuff. Like, that's not how the licenses work. And so I think that they're still within their rights as an open source dev, you know, to do this kind of thing. But yeah, what they do with it in terms of, like, the, you know, navigation around security measures, that's always going to be the issue there. And, you know, I just looked. Ryujinx has a Patreon up.
Yep.
And they've got 4,000 members.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. They're making money.
And so they're pulling in about $2,000 a month, according to just looking at the Patreon page. But there's nothing associated with, like, you'll get something out of this other than early access to progress reports and support on Discord. Like, that's all you're going to really get. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's definitely a gray area right there. If I was a dev and I was making a Switch emulator or any emulator, I would just have a donate to my PayPal if you'd like button. And that's where I would stop, you know. But
yeah, but I think that the PayPal donate button, no one clicks ever.
Oh, they don't. Yeah, absolutely. Like, if you think about, so, you know, the emulation station developer for Android, we've talked about this before, like, he was not getting any money for any of his project. And so he said, okay, well, I will funnel all of that through Android and make that a paid app one time only, $5 or whatever. And that'll, like, compensate for all the work that I've done on Windows and everywhere else and Mac. I mean, he's got all these ports everywhere. If you go to that, like, he's pulling in like $6,000 a month right now on Patreon, which was pennies before. So it is absolutely working for him now. And I think people are happy to pay that $5 to get that experience too. So win on both sides, basically. Mm-hmm. That's a significant amount of money. You know, it's like, what, $70,000 a year kind of thing, you know, to be developing. And that's pretty awesome. And I can understand why developers like the idea of being compensated for their efforts. Now, there's always the whole like old school emulation thinking where it's like, well, no, if you're going to be making an emulator, you're doing it for free for the community kind of thing. And I get all that too, you know. But at the same time, people got to eat and that's their time. And yeah, so,
right?
Yeah, there's always going to be a balance. So,
like a real bizarre thing. It's like, yeah, super genius. Do this for nothing and all the time.
Right.
Everywhere. Always.
Yeah.
Like, and respond to my messages.
Yeah.
When I send you a message, you better respond right away and tell me how to fix a thing.
Yeah.
Right.
I lied. I got one more thing. We had a question, a comment that somebody had sent in on the previous episode. And they said, we were talking about incentivizing, Valve incentivizing people to buy games on Steam. And they said, well, what if Valve did that for developers and, you know, optimizing their games for the Steam Deck? If a developer supports the Steam Deck and makes sure that their games run at a certain frame rate, at a certain quality, then Steam could cut their cut down to 20% instead of 30%. Do you guys think that Valve should do that in order to get more devs to use this as their target? And by this, I'm holding up the Steam Deck for the audio listeners. What do you think, Carrie?
So there's a few things that we have to like kind of take this approach with. Number one is Valve already has a flexible payments structure depending on how many you sell. It's hidden to us, but for some of the big time sellers, they actually lower that amount. So not everyone's doing that 30%. Also, so on top of that, on going along that route is that even indie developers can like make like 10,000 Steam keys, which Steam gets a big fat donut of, and then they can sell it on third party websites like GMG, Green Man Gaming, and other stuff, Fanatical. They can sell it on those, right? And Valve doesn't get a penny of that. They can also just do it directly on their site or giving, you know, whatever they want to do. So Valve is super flexible in that area. However, when we think about the very large games, Valve has already been like picking and choosing. So you look at Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk, when it released in 2017 or 2018, whenever it released, before the Steam Deck existed, Valve actually did work on the Proton layer to get it to run better. And this was only on gaming PCs, Linux gaming PCs. And you're like, well, what the heck? Why are they doing work on there? They did it for God of War. They did it for Elden Ring. But Elden Ring just happened to exist at the same time that the Steam Deck came out. So it just was like this beautiful unison of like, hey, look, you just get the latest Proton version and all the stuttering that you see on PC doesn't exist here. And it's like, oh my goodness, that's amazing. And even to this day, I actually have to double check this, but even for like a year or two after Cyberpunk came out, if you like doing the benchmark was like a clear indicator that Proton and all the other stuff, all the enhancements that Valve had done was way better than where Windows was on the same hardware. You would see like frame pacing issues on Windows, and it's just a clean line on Steam Deck and SteamOS and Proton. So Valve already does the Proton layer, and they will single target games that they think are worth it. Something that are going to be big headline titles. They already do work on there. So saying to get a game developer to do work on there is kind of interesting. I think that, I don't know if Valve would like work with them. I think it's like Valve can see wishlist data, right? They already know what big sellers are going to be. They're like, oh, He's got a bazillion wish list on this game. Let's talk to these guys. So they got all the metadata that they want to, like, kind of finesse things to make sure however good they need to make it. But yeah, there's you know, Valve's doing a lot on Proton, and they already have singled out certain games where they made the performance much better. Having the game developer do it themselves, that's cool, and I think that like Cyberpunk 2077, they made a Steam Deck preset. So you go in the graphics settings and
That's terrible, though. Don't ever use that. That Steam Deck preset is garbage. Terrible preset.
But along those lines... Oh, you know who else? Durante. Do you know who Durante is?
No.
Okay, so back in the days, he's still prevalent. Dark Souls comes out for PC, and it's jank. It only runs at 720p. I think it's locked at 30 FPS. Like, just this PC port that was just heinous. And Durante comes out and just fixes it all up. They can do any resolution you want, frame rate uncapped, and everyone's like, you know, base Durante and all this other stuff.
This is mods?
This is a, yeah, like a patch to Dark Souls.
but not by From Software.
By this dude Durante. So he creates this, he creates a company where he helps a lot of Japanese pubs and developers. So a lot of XSEED games use his company to port his PC games. And as a result, they've been better. A few of his games actually reference the old GPD Win 1. It says GPD Win 1 preset. You can just go boop, and that makes all the settings for running in a handheld state. So that is something that I think is still worthwhile, is something that's like, handheld. You know, just saying something that says handheld, right, as a preset. Now, I'm saying the Steam Deck preset on Cyberpunk could be better, but just coming to grips that handhelds are, our PCs are going to be a thing, making a preset in your game is something that I think you should do, like, going forward.
Yeah, and if Valve said, okay, you guys get a 5% bonus that you're not paying us if you make that handheld preset and it results in a good experience on the Steam Deck, who decides whether what a good experience is obviously up to Valve. Russ, do you think that they should do that?
Yeah, I don't. So I'm putting on my, like, government, like, employee hand, like hat that I used to wear, you know, when I was in the military, when people come with these nice ideas, like, you got to think about, how is this going to work, right? So is Valve going to hire somebody to manage this program? Like, is somebody else going to take time out of their day to, like, determine, yes, you now get the 5% discount, you know, that kind of thing. That's, and then are other people going to game it so that they get the discount where they're not actually making it a better experience? Like, those are all the things that'll happen just as a result of human beings being part of a program. Like, that's just what we do, right? But I would caution to say that just let the market figure it out. So think of it like accessibility features in games, right? When a publisher, like, and a developer, like, really takes the time and makes really good accessibility options, like when that first started coming out, people were praising it to the point where it then started becoming its own norm, right? Where people were like, this is the incentive zone is the positive exposure that you get for doing it, and also, you know, making it more accessible for other people to play your game.
Yeah, and so, it became like a category at the Game Awards too.
Right, exactly. And so that's what I would like to see, is that the market itself just got, everyone kind of picks up on it and be like, man, that was awesome that they made that handheld preset. I hope more games do it. And then devs hear that and go, oh, like, and then they start doing it. You know what I mean? Let the market itself kind of push it as opposed to trying to incentivize it, because that's just going to make the management of it just a pain in the butt. And so that's what I would like to see, is that the culture kind of starts to accept it. And then we start to see that just as a norm in when it comes to gaming.
Well, big thank you to John Miranda of 4587 for sending in that question. I appreciate that. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Nerd Nest podcast. I recently posted a video about my time at PAX. Carrie and I were in that video. We had an absolute, I had a blast at PAX, even though I messed up my knee. If you want to know more about that, watch the video. Carrie, did you post a video from PAX, or did you just...
I have shorts that I posted, which were like PAX Day 1, PAX Day 2. They went on... My wife helped me do it for Instagram and TikTok as well. And I am still working on, like, a generalized my favorite games from PAX East. But I just have, like, this stuff that I need to get ahead of right now. It's, like, it's building up on me, and other stuff is getting shipped to me. So that's getting on the back burner, so that might come out a bit late. But, yeah, I have done shorts already.
All right. Do you have a video that's coming out this week?
I did three videos this week, which is unusual for me, especially with how busy I was. So what I did, the last video I did was on the Orange Pi, and I also did one on the Ugreen NES, and I also did the Told You an Xbox Handheld Was Possible. So those are three videos that I did. The next video that I have, which I'm hoping will be Monday, is the latest GPD Win Mini 2024 review. Big fan of it. Bless Asus for making a handheld, because that's basically what they're using. They're using Asus's panel, their display panel, in it. So I get all the RR. It's a native landscape display, and I just set it to 10 watt, and I don't care. I don't care what the frame rate is. It's like, all right, let VRR sort it out. And everything looks smooth, and I just don't give a darn. So, it's great. It's everything I wished for like 5 years ago.
Very cool. Russ, you got a video coming out this week, or the other one that you posted yesterday?
Yeah, so I did a video on the MSI Claw emulation. I just felt like Kerry did such a good job with his review, kind of eviscerating how it is right now, that I was like, I don't want to make a video that's going to be the same. And so I was like, let's at least test something that might be pretty good, and that's going to be the emulation parts of it. Given the fact that we have so many CPU cores to work with, like maybe that won't be the same poor experience like we had with PC gaming. And sure enough, yeah, like for the most part, other than some compatibility issues with Xbox and 360 emulators, most of it played as good as I was hoping, or at least as expected. And so it still definitely pulled a lot of power, but that was an interesting video to make, and then I'll make my review. I don't know. I'm going to give it about 2 weeks for them to do a software update, and then I'm just going to go for it and do a Kerry style review where I say, just how bad is it? Let's go. And so so I'm waiting on that. So that'll be coming, but not this week. I did get the new Ambernic, like RG35XX. What do they call this? 2024 model. So it's not the Plus. It's not the regular one. It's the regular one, but with the Plus's chipset and no other upgrades, and it costs more.
So this is the one that doesn't have Wi-Fi.
No Wi-Fi, no Bluetooth, smaller battery. And it's got a D-pad that's not so great. And so I've finished filming that. I'll probably put that out tomorrow. But the only way I can think of it, the only reason they made this is because they ran out of chips for the original one, but they had extra shells. And they're like, what are we going to do now? And so they put the new chip in the old shells because they have to get rid of inventory. And they expect us to just not notice. And so, so I'll do a video on this. It's, as you can imagine, it's not going to be super positive, but I always got to cover every Ambernic handheld because it's just part of my channel. And so, so I have that. And then I'm not sure after that. I, like Kerry, I've got a stack of things that I need to review, to the point where I'm like actively like feeling bad for some of these companies because I'm not hitting my deadlines, where I was like, yeah, send me the thing and I'll review it. And then I'm not doing it. And so I got to get back to some of that stuff. And then maybe some software videos too.
And if you guys are looking for a video about like how I put together the podcast, there's a link down below that'll take you to that video, by the way. It's on my other channel, which is just about content creation and stuff like that. But I hope you guys all have a fantastic day, and stay rad, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.